Tired of all the bugs in your yard? Enjoy your backyard again with Cutter Backyard Ready to Spray Bug Control at Menards. It kills mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, and other insects fast, controlling them for up to 12 weeks. A 32-ounce Ready to Spray container covers up to 5,000 square feet and is on sale now through July 13th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Today on The Grave Talks, we continue our conversation about the ghosts of the Bridgewater Triangle with author Christopher Balzano. At the risk, once again, of sounding kind of stupid that maybe a lot of people know about the Pugwudgies, but I'm not familiar with Pugwudgies. Can you kind of explain what that is, kind of the concept of them?
Yeah, this is great. I'll be like, blah, 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 Bigfoot people, cryptids are ridiculous. Now let me talk about Pugwudgies. So I'm gonna maybe tell the story a little bit different than I normally do, in that I'm going to tell you like the evolution of it for me, right? And over the course of that, you'll learn everything you need to know about. I was working on Dark Woods, and I was doing a lot of research about weird things that happened in Freetown and the surrounding area, particularly the Freetown State Forest. And you have to keep in mind, at that time, you know, we're talking 2002, 2003, the internet's there, but people aren't, you know, the internet's what you put on it. And so people are not putting a lot of stuff. They're still hiding their stories. The paranormal and the supernatural is not accepted. And so I was able to kind of jump on some message boards, right? I'm dating myself now, message boards, and talk about this, that. I'm writing a book. Have you experienced anything? And just from posting things that I was learning as I went, I got three very specific reports, and all the reports had the same basic thing, elements to them. And this was after I'd already gotten a report of the similar thing outside of the triangle, and in retrospect had experienced my own, which I'll let you tell you about. But these three reports were all three walking in or around the woods, and they came across what they described almost exactly. They all described it the same way, as being like a troll, right? So this around 3 foot tall, one of them, he was clothed. One of them, he was clearly not wearing clothes. And the other one, they definitely didn't have anything on the top, but he had a pot belly hanging over so they couldn't see whether the bottom was covered. It was hairy in the same way that, like, I'm hairy, right? Like, in other words, it wasn't a fur ball, but it clearly had thick hair that it would be embarrassed to be at the beach with, right? Two of them described the nose as being somewhat elongated like canine. And in all of the – and it was – they were kind of skinny, but then they had this unusual pot belly kind of thing going on. And they were 3 feet tall, and all of them were seen at a distance of between like 10 feet and 20 feet. So this wasn't spotting it across someplace. This was, oh my word, like stumbling upon this thing.
Yeah, that's close.
Right, exactly. That's my point. They were very close encounters, and they were staring at each other, and there was a stare down. And then something would happen, and they would look back, and it was gone. And they didn't necessarily, it was more of like, they weren't scared. It was more of this feeling of what the heck just happened. All three of the stories then went on to say, these three different sightings all went on to say that whatever this creature was returned to them 3 days, like 3 or 4 days later. And they would be one incident. The person was in a parking lot and they saw the creature. Once again, this parking lot was near Freetown, the Freetown State Forest, and the creature was in its rearview mirror staring at it.
Ooh, I don't like that.
That's the easiest one. The other one, the person woke up to find the creature at the foot of their bed.
Oh,
once
yeah.
again, staring at them.
Don't like that one at all.
And then the other one, the Pugwudgie, or this creature, I should say, was looking at them from outside the window, watching them sleep. The only problem was they were even with the window and they were on the second floor. So they seem to be floating up near the window. Think Salem's Lot, but with a little trolley type thing. And they were all freaked. Then it was freaked out, right? And they all, once again, almost using the exact same words, described it as, I got the message loud and clear that this thing knew where I lived and to stay away from the forest.
Oh, that's creepy.
No idea what this was. And they were looking to me for answers. What is this? You're the expert. Like, what is this? And I'm like, I have no idea what that is. Right. And I had all these different theories and I would throw them out. And so what happened was I was reading a book by Joe Citro, who's out of Vermont. And he very casually threw out the word Pukwudgie as if everyone knew what the word was. And then a little later on in this book, Passing Strange, he then dedicates maybe like a paragraph to it and basically says, like, they're a Wampanoag Native American. When you think of the Wampanoags, think of, Squanto who meets the pilgrims, right? And they're these creatures that live in the woods that kind of act like gremlins. I can't remember the exact words he used. And that was it. It was very brief. And so at that time, I was a librarian. I had, you know, the top resources at my disposal. I went into work. I started researching Pukwudgies. And when I say, and feel free, everyone who's talking, to Google the word Pukwudgie now and see how many hits you get. The only responses, and there were only about 100 responses that came back, and every single one referenced this book called The Good Giant and the Bad Pukwudgie. And so I, being a librarian, I immediately, you know, ordered the book for the library and then stole it. And it talked about this story, and it's the Mashop, the creator god, and him and his kids are having trouble, and his wife, they're having trouble because these Pukwudgies are going crazy, and they're these little mischievous trolls that kind of are trickster spirits, and they do all this stuff, and they can shapeshift. They can, they have the use of poison arrows that they shoot at people. They love to set fires. And basically what happens is Mashop goes off to have a love affair. And when he goes off to have a love affair, the Pukwudgies go from being mischievous to being evil. And they start to kidnap the Wampanoag. They start to murder and burn the villages of the Wampanoag. They start to lead members of the Wampanoag out into the woods and then kill them. And they totally change, and Mashop comes back to, like, and they're like, you have to do something. The Pukwudgies have gone crazy, and he fights them. The Pukwudgies kill all of his giant sons and probably kill him. Like, the lore is a little bit different. And then in the back of this book, it said, I got this story from this other book called The Narrow Land. And so I pulled out this book, I found the book, The Narrow Land, bought that book for the library. And once again, because I was a librarian at the time, I literally just ripped out the bibliography and ordered every single book that was in the bibliography, every single article that was there. And I started to find that this creature, this little monster, appeared all throughout history. You know, 500 years ago, the Wampanoag were talking about it. You know, 300 years ago, as they started to Christianize the Wampanoag, the Pilgrims and you know, Plymouth Colony and all those, and Massachusetts Bay Colony, they were talking about it. And there was this deep, deep history and story, all these stories of these Pukwudgies. And so I started to publish them. And as I was publishing them, once again, I don't know if it's because these small creatures exist in every culture, in every society, in every region of every place. They have these small diminutive monsters that are tricksters that then can become even worse than tricksters, or whether it was because the name Pukwudgie was so cool to say. But they became very popular. Like, people started to just go crazy with it. Like, they really latched onto my research about it. And it got published and repoed. And what I found is that, you know, I mean, it's in the Song of Hiawatha. You know, they're referenced in different historical documents in Massachusetts. And not only that, but they're not just a New England cryptid. Like, they are the centerpiece of these weird elemental type creatures. Probably the best description, because people have asked me, what are they? Are they ghosts? Are they? They're fae, right? They're fairies. is probably the best example, the best relationship that I can make. They just took off. And this crazy thing is that if you Google what a puck wedgie is, and you look at the images are nothing what a puck wedgie actually looks like, right? Like, I, you know, my daughter brought this to my attention a few weeks ago. She's like, "Dad, have you seen this puck wedgie video? There's this really creepy, it looks like a slop and it's talking in this weird AI voice. And it talks about how the puck wedgies were raping Wampanoag women and having these hybrid kids. And that was their goal, was to make half puck wedgie, half human kids. And she's like, "Dad, this video's got like a million hits on it already, you know?" And so if you go and if you Google it, people have attached all kinds of whatever they're scared of to this, right? Like, there's no description that I've ever seen in like original documents that talk about it having claws, right? Or that talk about it having these snarly teeth. And yet when you look at the pictures, it looks more like a chupacabra than it does a troll. And the troll is a much more accurate picture of it. But I'm probably the only person in the world whose bucket list was to get to Indiana. For years, I'd wanted to get to this place in Indiana called Mound State Park. And it seemed another epicenter of puck wedgie stories and puck wedgie reports and all this stuff coming out. They spell the word differently. But it's the same story, same kind of thing. There's a little bit of a regional twist to it, though. Because I had been looking at them from all over, right? Like, they're all throughout the Cherokee lore. They're all throughout parts of Canada, upstate New York. They talk about it. Like, in other words, it's not just a Wampanoag thing. But Indiana seemed a little isolated to me, right? And so for years, I wanted to get to Mound State Park. And I finally did. And I think 2017. I do a podcast called Tripping on Legends. We did a road trip. We're like, we're going to go to Indiana. My partner happened, her grandparents happened to live right out of Indianapolis. My best friend was living in Indianapolis. And I was like, this is great. We'll go up. We'll tour all these different places on the way. We'll go see Mothman for a little bit. And then we'll head over to Indiana. When we got to Mound State Park, it just happened to be that there was a doctor there who was doing research and running these kind of classes out of the park. And she said she had been studying puck wedgies, but more importantly, she'd been studying the mounds of the Midwest for years and drawing these connections to them. And she said that Mound State Park, now if anyone knows Indiana, its motto is literally the crossroads of America, right? Mound State Park became a central meeting ground for hundreds of different tribes all throughout the United States and Canada. And they would come to Mound State Park to kind of have like a summit, right? And it didn't matter any trouble between tribes or anything like that. Everything was put aside. And representatives from all these different tribes came to Indiana because it was in the center of the country. And they told stories. They buried their most honored dead in these mounds, right? Which is why you hear about these, you know, great chiefs, but you never where they're buried, right? Most of them are buried in Indiana. And she said that when they would have these conversations, there was no common language, right? Because oftentimes you're talking about people who might be thousands of miles away from each other. How do you communicate? It's not as if they all spoke English or something, right? And so they would, there were some words that just kind of caught on. And one of the words that caught on was puck wedgie. And so the Wampanoags would kind of talk about the activities of the puck wedgie. Other tribes would leave Indiana with this umbrella term for whatever their little monster in the woods that mess with people. And that accounts for there being, you know, at least 7 or 8 different, very clear cut species of puck wedgies within like the big explanation of them.
That totally actually makes sense on where that could have originated.
Yeah. I mean, it's an Algonquin word and it means like, you know, I've heard different translations of it, meaning like people of the woods or small people of the woods or something like that. But you have places like the Dover tribe, the Mississippi tribe, like the Biloxi tribe. They all adopted this the same way like we would use the word monster. Like, oh, have you seen that monster movie? No. What is it? Oh, it's Creature from the Black Lagoon. Like, in other words, you use that first level of, you know, I don't know, I'm bad with science. What is it? Species? And then it goes genome or whatever. Like you would use you would use that big umbrella term of monster, and then you would get specific to what yours was. Same way, you would say Pukwudgie, and then you would say, oh, this, you know, it's got red hair and it's all over the place, or it's got this. And so, you know, you would get more specific to it.
And it's fun to say.
It's hilarious to say. It's like, I love, do you know how many radio hosts think they're the first person to have this conversation with me and go, sounds like someone getting a wedgie while playing hockey. I'm like, oh, that's so original. I've never heard that before.
Oh, that made me laugh. Okay, so. Like,
thank you, because you were about to say it, weren't you?
No, I didn't even think of that. Oh, okay.
And then, well, so like years ago, Dave Schrader is a really popular paranormal radio host. And him and I became friends, Darkness on the Edge of Town. And then, you know, he took over Coast to Coast for a while and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, him and I got to know each other. I was on his show a few times and we ran in some, you know, crowds that were the same. And so he came to Florida right after I moved here. It's the infamous, you know, Ghost Hunter did this conference in St. Pete that was a total debacle. And, I'm not sure if he was hosting something or he was just there, but he has a very big personality. And I wasn't selling anything. My friend just came down and was like, hey, I'm going to be in St. Pete. Do you want to join me? I'm like, hell yeah, come up. And so I went up there and I was just kind of hanging out with my friend. And Dave saw me from across the convention hall and he yelled out, hey, Pukwudgie guy. And so that kind of became a name, right? And people would be like, and on tonight's show, we have the Pukwudgie guy, Chris Balzano, or Chris Balgadano. They would have messed up my last name, but they would get the Pukwudgie part right. And so over the years, I've been attacked for calling myself the Pukwudgie guy, but it's totally a Dave Schrader thing. So yell at Dave.
From here on out, Chris, you will now be known to me as the Pukwudgie guy. Because it's just fun to say.
And of course, I'm always able to, you know, be self-deprecating and be like, that's because I look like one. I am also short and hairy. You know, and it's one of those things, you know, I also make the joke that Pukwudgies are now part of Harry Potter, that the American version of Hogwarts, the four houses are all Native American myths. And there is Pukwudgie House. William the Pukwudgie helped the first witch who came to America survive. And so they became best friends. And so she named one of the houses after his species. You know, like that's how popular it's now become. Pukwudgie beer, the band called Pukwudgie. Like, you know, it's really, and it's always interesting because when people cite stuff and when people write about them, it's sometimes word for word my original research. And as a person, you know, who lives in a really crappy house, like I'm like, hey, you know, mention me.
Yeah.
But as someone who loves folklore, I love to see, or I'm interested and compelled to watch this, like how it's changed over the years, because, you know, it really has taken a life of its own. And I wonder, that weird part of me wonders what Pukwudgies think about what people are saying about them now. So it's like, wait a minute, man, I didn't do that, you know?
And there's going to be comments like, I can't believe Carol doesn't know what a Pukwudgie is. So
You know what? I think it's one of those things that if you know, you know. Like, I don't think there's, you know, it's not as if people are like Taylor Swift and Pukwudgies. Like, it's not. So they're not, you know, they're not that popular. But when you Googled, I bet you found.
Oh, yeah. There's a million. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes.
You know, and it's I love to tell this story and I know you'll appreciate it. So years ago, I was on a show called Paranormal State and they interviewed me because they had a case in Massachusetts. I was down here in Florida by that time. They interviewed me and they wanted me to come up and I was like, I really can't come up. And they're like, well, here's what we'll do. I'll interview you. One person was interviewing you. I'll interview you. And then we'll have just your voice, like a voiceover, and we'll do it. Charlie's Angel style. And you'll just be a speaker box in the middle and you'll be telling these people about the Pukwudgies. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. Okay. We'll do that. Right. So one person interviewed me, but if you watch the episode, it's like Chip Coffee asked me this question, and you know, Michelle Belanger asked me this question, and Ryan Buell asked me this question, but it was just one guy, right? And so they do this whole thing, and it's not a very long, my segment's not very long, but they asked me, how do you get rid of a puck wedgie? And I'm like, you leave it alone, right? It's like an elemental. There is no, like, you know, I banish thee. Like, it does what it wants to do. I've never heard of anybody repelling a puck wedgie. By the way, I've also not heard of puck wedgies attacking, regardless of what the video says that I made. But how about the guy said to me in this interview, how about if you plant a strawberry bush? Now, there is a connection between puck wedgies and strawberries, right? Especially, remember I talked about Moss Shop. The puck wedgies stole his strawberry bread. They have a love of strawberries. They like strawberries. Like, you get over it. And so I was like, well, why would you plant a puck? Why would you plant a strawberry bush if you're trying to get rid of them, right?
Yeah, that, like, would attract them.
Right, that would attract them. And he's like, well, as a sign of respect, and maybe they can come and they can take a few strawberries, but they know you're being respectful and they go away. And I'm like, you know, basically, as I'm going through this, and I'm like, yeah, I guess, like, you could strawberry bush, like, that might have an effect, or whatever I said, right? So the night the show is on, I'm watching it, and you hear not even the person who asked the question say, how do we get rid of a puck wedgies? How to puck wedgie? And you hear me very clearly over the speakerphone say, plant a strawberry bush.
Oh, no.
Now, almost immediately, and I'm talking about within a few weeks, the entire online mythology, this creature who had existed in oral tradition for 500 years, right, immediately changed to puck wedgies are running around stealing strawberries, or like surround yourself with strawberries like you would garlic for a vampire, throw strawberries at puck wedgies. And I was like, the how fast the story changed and became a really solidified part of the lore of the puck wedgies, this strawberry story, was really amazing to me.
That's really interesting. And you were part of that origin story, but you really weren't.
You were edited. It, right?
You were edited to be part of this.
Right, right. They wanted the shot of the team out there planting the bush. You know what I'm saying? And, like, you know, kind of like in an A-team, like, you know, montage of them doing yard work, I guess. And so they were intent to have them plant this bush because they wanted the shot and they thought it would do something. And so they edited it up. But to me, it was always now sitting back watching, like, wow, like, there's no mention of strawberries being able to, you know, repel them for hundreds of years. And then all of a sudden, bam, Ryan Buell says it. So it's got to be true.
And it would attract them, if anything.
Right? Like, if not even if I'm a pug, if you plant a strawberry bush, I'm going to come to your house.
Well, come to my house. I have some growing in my backyard.
I'm going to take that invitation, except for you just said that, you know, there's flat all around it. I don't like flat.
It's very flat where I live.
Yeah.
One other thing I did want to ask you about in the book is you have a chapter in here called A Triangle Within a Triangle. So we've talked about all these other cryptids and puck wedgies. I had to just throw that in one more time because it is fun to say. And
did you want to ask me about the when puck wedgies attack video before you move on or no?
Oh, yes. So, yes, thank you.
And I'm not saying that because I want to talk about it more. I'm just saying because you asked earlier.
So. No, I got so into this puck wedgie story that I forgot that I had something I wanted to ask you about. So I watched this documentary that you're in about the Bridgewater Triangle, and towards the end of it, the guy's like, so Chris Balzano was researching one of his books, and they name which book, and I didn't write that day out. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, thanks. That's awesome.
So I would like for you to insert the name of the book.
I will,
right,
don't
here.
Worry.
Okay. And so there's this video footage of this woman, Maureen, it's nighttime. She's just kind of standing there. And then it's almost like something possesses her. Mm-hmm. And it's actually rather disturbing to watch her because if she's faking it, she's a really good actress. And most people aren't. And what happened? Can you tell us a little the backstory of this video?
So her name's Maureen Wood. So I was writing a book called Picture Yourself Ghost Hunting, which I hate that title because I hate the term ghost hunting, but whatever, that's what they want. It's called Picture Yourself Ghost Hunting. And part of it, it was like a dummy guide. It was Thompson West's version of dummy guides. Part of the hook of buying this book is that it comes with a DVD. And so on the DVD, they wanted me to show a whole bunch of like out in the field type stuff. And so I was like, all right, here's what I'll do. I want to make a whole video that's showing different types of investigators in different types of locations, right? And so I went out to the Freetown State Forest with my friend Ron Kolick and his group, who were, for the time, like uber cutting edge science, right? Or equipment, I should say, not science, but equipment. One of the members of the team was the fire marshal and had like the first generation FLIR camera, right? So we're out there. They had a very methodical equipment-based approach. And we had this infrared camera. We had this thermal camera, I should say, right? Just out in the woods. And the hook for me, or the why I wanted to go with them, was that within the group, there's this trans medium named Maureen Wood. And she is known for picking up things and getting possessed, right? Like she's, and so I had done a few things with her, and I'm not sure she's real. However, I think she thinks she's 100% real. Like her reactions in these places, I don't think is, I'm now going to pretend that I'm being possessed. I think she genuinely feels what she pushes out, right? Because I've been in locations with her that were really dangerous, and she has no concern for her body, and she's flailing around as these things are taking over her. And I'm like, I like that spiritual mixed with the science, right? Like, that was cool. Let's go to the Assonet Ledge, which is known for Pukwudgie sightings. It's known for having all these ghosts. Let's go investigate there. And so we are investigating the Assonet Ledge. We're at the bottom of it. Nothing's really going on. But we get good footage of them going around and their techniques and stuff, which is what I wanted for the video, right? And so we start to pack up the equipment, and my cameraman, a guy by the name of Andrew Lake, my cameraman shuts the camera off, and he starts walking back to the car, and immediately the atmosphere at the Assonet Ledge changed, right? Like it was as if someone had turned an air conditioner on, like right in front of me. Like, I mean, you literally, like my stomach like leapt, like there was something different, and I'm not sensitive out in the field, right? And so I went, everyone stop. I said, something is different. And I looked up at Maureen, who is next to me, and I said to her, you know what I'm talking about. And before I got the sentence out, her eyes roll in the back of her head. Andrew comes rushing up and takes what you see in that video. Which is essentially it, you know, what the video shows is something overtaking Maureen. And then Ron trying to protect her by calling upon God and Jesus. And then me realizing she's going to hurt herself, taking her out because I had worked in a jail. So I take her legs out and restrain her so she can't go anywhere. So I'm the dude in the backwards hat who like takes her legs out and holds her on the ground. And she's writhing and she's screaming. And this is very like unearthly, unnatural, like gargle that comes from her. It's really disturbing.
It was kind of like The Exorcist.
Yeah, it was. Oh, it was like this really. And, you know, over the years, because I mean, geesh, that's 15 years old now, at least. Right. And over the years, people have attacked the video and said it was a fake. I'm like, first of all, how can it be a fake? Like, if we didn't fake anything, like, that's what the video is. You can believe Maureen or not believe Maureen. We didn't mess with the sound. We didn't do anything with it. Like, it's literally, I mean, I didn't even have, like, the ability to do that kind of stuff back in, like, you know, 2006 or whatever when, or, you know, well, 2008 when I moved here, right? Like, that I didn't even have like the skills to be able to do that. And it was initially it was thrown out as a promotional video. Like, hey, like this video that shows this really weird thing, go buy my book. But then it took a life of its own and it started being on TV shows, and people started, to cut it and repost it and then, put their own stuff to it. But the weird thing is that the second part of that footage is on Andrew Lake's website, but it's never been like really out to the public, right? So the important thing that you need to know about Pukwudgies is that their companions on their spooky journey through life are these things called Taipaiwunkas that are, we would call them like ghost lights, right? Or will-o'-the-wisp. They are the spirit energy of Wampanoags whose lives they've taken, and they use them to lure people in, right? So there are these balls of light that flash, that like, move, that appear one place, then disappear and move another, right? Like, so these balls of light, these orbs, are tightly connected to Pukwudgies. Well, as that shot is going on, what you see is, you see me take Maureen out, and I'm restraining her, and she's doing that crazy, crazy scream. And then it cuts. But in reality, what happens is the camera goes upon the other members who are there, who are kind of reacting to it. And as they're reacting to it, the people who are up at the top of the Asana ledge, we're at the bottom of the ledge, the people up at the top of the ledge are all drinking and partying, right? Because it's a party place. They see all this weird stuff going on down below, and they start yelling at us, swearing, right? Which is why we can't use the footage. Swearing at us. And then, of course, the investigators, the paranormal investigators, are swearing back up at them. So there's this, whole thing going back and forth. But as that's going on, in the forest behind the investigators, there's a whole light show going on. Oh. There's all these orbs flying through the trees away from the Asana ledge, as if these Taipaiwunkas are now, escaping through the woods now that this thing has happened. So however much people want to debate or they want to say that it's not real and all this other stuff with it, that's perfectly fine. It's literally a commercial. Like, it's meant to make you excited and interested and then buy something. But it's definitely not faked, and it's not altered in any way.
Because the way she's screaming it, because I was like, if she's acting, she's good.
And that's why I have to, so how do you say your friend is a liar, right?
Yeah.
And how do you, I've got my own view on psychics and all that stuff like that, and which ones are good and which ones aren't good. And working with them or not working with them. But I do know that I've had that same experience with Maureen in several different locations. But if I had to swear upon a stack of whatever's to it, I feel that whatever that experiences are when that happens to her, for her, it's genuine. I don't think that she's acting. I think that it that's what happens to her, whether it's paranormal or not. Mm-hmm. That's for other people to decide.
It's interesting. I'm glad you reminded me to ask you about that, because as I'm watching, I'm like, oh my God, is she possessed by a Pukwudgie?
Yeah, it's crazy. And the comments, every few years I go back to that video, because I don't even have the password for that YouTube account anymore. I have no idea so I've not moderated it. So it's just kind of run around like weeds. And some of the things are absolutely crazy. I've had death threats on there. I've had I've had people who say they represent the Wampanoag tribe say that, this needs to be taken down for this reason and that reason. And I'm like, all I know is there were no Wampanoags talking about Pukwudgies 20 years ago, and now they are. So
you did your
job. I am not the problem.
Oh my goodness. So the one thing I do want to talk to you about, within the triangle, there is ghostly activity. And we have talked about everything but that. And there's a chapter in the book, A Triangle Within a Triangle. And there's some really interesting ghost stories as well. And obviously we can't get into all of them by the book. But I find it so interesting, this whole area has all this really different activity, between the cryptids, the UFOs, the Pukwudgies, and then your ghost stories and haunted places. And especially in the one town, Rehoboth. Rehoboth. Did I say that correctly?
Yep.
That seems like a very haunted town.
Yeah, and it's very different because, like, in Freetown, you don't talk about the ghosts, right? Like, you know, there was a backlash to not only me having published that book and told some of those ghost stories, but then also the way that I told them. So some people, they were very defensive of them. That's not the way it goes in Rehoboth. In Rehoboth, which maybe because it doesn't have all the murders and like the deaths and the drug use and stuff like that, maybe because it's this quaint little New England town, like it benefits from having this ghostly lore, you know?
Right.
So they very much embrace the kind of very well-known hauntings that take place there.
You know, and I get that too. We have a town in Kansas that's like that, Atchison, Kansas. Mm-hmm. They've embraced that side, you know, come here and visit all these haunted mansions. And so I just think it's interesting that within the Triangle, there are also these incredible ghost stories. Like Lizzie Borden's house is within the Triangle, correct? Or is it on the edge of the Triangle?
So Lauren Coleman would say no.
Okay.
But Fall River, which is where the Lizzie Borden house is, Fall River used to be part of Freetown. So to me, how can you not include them? You know what I'm saying? So it's also interesting to note that if I were to ask you, and this has changed a little bit, but if I were to ask you, name the top five most important, you know, people in the paranormal world or whatever, like in the last like 50 years, you know, and you might say, think like I said, Jeff, but you might say, you know, ghost hunters, you might say Zach and his crew, and you probably say the Warrens. So it's actually crazy how many of these well-known established paranormal things are just outside the Triangle. You know what I'm saying? Like the Warrens lived just outside the Triangle. I would argue that where the ghost hunters originally from in Rhode Island could potentially be part of the Triangle. Like there's a lot of that type of stuff that's connected to a lot of famous cases and also a lot of like Lizzie Borden house, you know, and a lot of famous people who work in the paranormal.
Because there wouldn't be like exact lines. It's not like they put up these perimeters in this.
Yeah, it's not as if you can say like, you know, on this side of the street, you know, you're doomed forever. And on this side of the street, you're fine. It really is one of those things where it almost even also seems to ebb and flow. And so when people talk to me, when I keep going on with my, it's a living being, I'm like, it's a living being. It yo-yo diets. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Like it gets a little bigger sometimes. Sometimes it's a little smaller. And when I'm trying to be less, you know, snarky about it, I say things like sometimes it's on its inhale and sometimes it's on its exhale.
Do you think that there is within the Triangle and the little kind of surrounding area, would you say there's more ghostly activity than the average per capita or per that space?
I think that you can, I mean, we kind of talked about this. You can go to any town and you're going to find ghost stories, right?
Right.
And so I'm not sure if it's the number of ghosts that are in a place as much as it is the weirdness of the ghost stories, you know, or the unusual type of activity that's there. Obviously, being in New England, you have maybe more history than other places, right? Like there've been settlements, there've been American or, you know, colonial settlements there longer than just about anywhere else in North America.
Right.
And so you're going to have a longer history and more people dying, and you're going to have a lot of important things that happen there. Right. But I would say, you know, I'm in the South now, and you know, this is Civil War area. Right. And there's a lot of places that are crazy, crazy haunted. But once again, there seems to be a straight line that you can draw between the ghost and what made the ghost. That you don't necessarily have in the Triangle. So I don't think it's the number. I think it's the uniqueness and the oddity of them.
Well, the way you've talked about the Triangle, kind of a living, breathing thing almost.
Yeah.
It would have energy. In a haunting is energy. So it almost seems like one energy could feed off the other energy.
Right. And that, like I said, that was the question of Dark Woods was, can the same energy that generates or feeds or whatever a haunting, can that energy also cause these serial killers to find their way here? And these cults to want to use energy to do their rituals? And is it also the same energy that makes it so that for some reason people are dying in higher numbers having to do with cancer? Like, is that energy itself the thing that makes the triangle the triangle?
Yeah, it's so interesting. Now, the book, you've got the two books, and you can buy them both on Amazon.
Yep.
The Ghosts of the Bridgewater Triangle, also Dark Woods, Cults, Crime, and the Paranormal in the Freetown State Forest. They're in Massachusetts. You can get both of those. You also have several other books.
I
so
do.
We'll have to talk about another one next. I'm thinking Ocala National Forest, the haunted Ocala National Forest.
The Ocala National Forest is the Freetown State Forest mixed with Florida Man. So it's bigger, it's darker, and there are more serial killers.
See, another interesting conversation, right?
Yeah. And, you know, if anyone wants to get a signed copy, they can order a copy directly from me. You can go to trippingonlegends.com. Tripping on Legends, the name of my podcast, trippingonlegends.com. Or you can even go to Facebook/trippingonlegends and just message me up and you can get your signed copy. As if my signature makes the book more valuable.
It does make the book more valuable. Tripping on Legends, you can listen to that wherever you listen to podcasts, right?
Yes. Once you finish your shows, then they can go through mine.
Absolutely.
I don't want to step on your audio.
They can listen to both. Well, thank you so much, Chris. It's always so nice to talk to you. I really enjoy
it. Thank you. I appreciate you having me on again.
And that wraps up our conversation with Christopher Balzano about the Bridgewater Triangle. You can buy his books on Amazon or get them directly from Chris at trippingonlegends.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything without the commercials, then become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or you can go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.